things that he said about forgiveness. But I don't think that's the focus of the reading today, and for part of the kind of tempest and true of the mind of the people who chose them. Think about anger. I almost called Ian this week to find out if anybody's ever written a history of anger. It'd be a great topic. It would really be a great topic. Why? Well, for a variety of reasons, because anger, for one, is as deeply human as is the capacity for joy, or the capacity for sadness, or the capacity to avoid pain, or whatever else. And yet anger seems to have a kind of unusual situation. I mean, you can go back to the Greek philosophers who dealt with it, but to say that you should feel nothing at all. You should be apathetic. You should feel nothing, no feelings. And above all, no feelings of anger. What is this about it? The psychiatrists say, at least many of them, that anger that is not acknowledged or expressed turns inward and produces depression. And I think they're probably right. I'm not a psychiatrist, but I know if something profoundly human is denied, it's going to turn into something self-destructive. And that makes all kinds of sense to me of the phenomenon of depression. And I think further evidence of the fact that we don't deal well with anger is that you can take anger management courses. You don't take joy management courses, or bewilderment management courses. What does this argue to? That there's something here profoundly important which we badly, badly deal with. I grew up in a lower middle class home where anger was considered bad form. You never express anger. That's a big class A. And nobody's so conscious of what is big class A as lower middle class people. Rich people can be angry at their leisure, it seems, but that was not permitted to us. And then, of course, we have that played out often enough into a kind of pathological religiosity, which says that anger, you know, one of the big seven, one of the capital sins, anger, nasty, nasty, bad stuff. And so I think there is this terrible problem of not being able to know what to do with something that is as humanly appropriate as is sexuality, or the capacity for joy. As I said, often enough, religion has not taught, but simply labeling anger in some kind of unequivocal way as a totally negative thing in human life. And so we always got those people who seem to be incapable of anger or really holy. Well, folks, I think that's wrong. I vividly remember in the old days when we used to pray the Psalms in Latin, a line that always jumped out at me. I don't even remember which psalm it was in. But the Latin goes, irascimini et non vite peccare. Be angry and don't sin. Be angry and don't sin. And if you look at the fourth chapter of the letter to the Ephesians, that same word is this. Be angry and don't sin. All of which again raises a question of, I mean, we have this first reading, which sounds more like Greek wisdom than Hebrew religiosity. It says, don't be angry. And then on the other hand, we have this master who is angry. And so there are enough how do we sort through all this data?
I don't know.
But I've thought about this all week, and I'd like to just make a few proposals, which I think are coherent.
What's the structure of anger?
I think it is a spontaneous. It's a spontaneous reaction to something that we feel is wrong. When something goes wrong that we think is wrong, there is an upsurge of resistance in us, and that form of resistance is, well, I think, what anger is. Okay? Therefore, we can see why this is so profoundly human, because every human being has walked around in her head or his head with a clear sense of what is right and what is wrong. And if that sense of what is right and what is wrong is contravened by somebody else, then we should not be surprised that there's an upsurge of this aspect that we call anger. But it is not, and I can't say this emphatically enough, anger is not in and of itself bad, as we have been taught, as I was taught. It may be unconventional in our society. It may be a breach of etiquette or a polite test. But that's besides the point. Jesus was angry. What kind of evidence of that? I went to a concordance of the Bible. There are all kinds of entries of anger. Being angry. Let's talk about the anger of God. Shouldn't God not be angry? Knowing that we're using metaphor. Okay? So the first thing I'd like to propose is to validate the reality of anger in our lives. It is real, it is genuine, and to deny that it ought not exist is to somehow mutilate oneself. And that, of course, is itself an enormous problem. Because that is, as I said, countercultural for us. And yet, as I said, we've all felt depressed, or we've swallowed what we think are offenses over and over again, and then there's this massive cosmic size explosion. Positive in a certain sense and negative response. That's all kinds of facts. So where are we? Let me make a proposal. For instance, if the church was built in such a way that pedophilia was not concealed, the hierarchy could hear. And this was not, as I said, hidden from people. Then the anger of the Christian community, as well as the hierarchy, would have obviated this awful situation in which we find ourselves today. For example, but let me finish with the best that I can do thus far in trying to get some criteria for what is holy anger, because there is such a thing. If the letter to the Ephesians was right, I mean, how much good would be undone unless people were angry? How much good would be left undone unless the energy generated by anger were not there and active? I think that's a really good question. But two proposals that I think that I
to ask when I'm aware of an upsurge of anger in myself, what makes me angry? What makes me angry? Because if I feel that I have been offended, you know, my status has not been acknowledged, some wrongness is present there, then that's one kind of anger. If I see children being physically abused, if I see radical injustice against black people or women or Jews, should I not be angry? Should I not be angry? So to ask the question, what makes me angry, is extraordinarily important. And then to ask the corollary question, why am I angry? Why am I angry? I think those two questions will do a great deal, first of all, toward illuminating for ourselves who we really are and where God is in our lives. Leave us, therefore, to the edge of this mysterious other that we're supposed to say we're spending our lives seeking.